Hello, this is Richard Alabone on webtalkradio.net, showing that paranormal is normal. And this week I'm talking about something really strange and spooky. At least 70 people who have had heart transplants have found that their personalities have changed in line with the donor of their new heart, but more than that, some have changed their habits to those of the heart donor, or even known the donor's name. In general, scientists don't want to know about spooky and unbelievable things like that, but there are some who have studied these cases and tried to find an explanation. I was unable to find a guest today to talk on these things, as scientists and doctors are very cautious, and it's all a bit too personal to the people concerned. So, firstly, I'm going to give examples of some of the very strange things that have happened to individuals after receiving a new heart, and then I'm going to discuss all the possible theories that biologists, doctors, and scientists have come up with to try and explain what's going on, and then I'll give some ideas of my own, which show how it all fits into my grand picture of the paranormal. Now, there's been many scientific papers and books about this. In 2002, 10 cases were reported in detail by Purcell, Schwartz and Rusak in the Journal of Near-Death Studies, which are available online in the open-accessed journal Antimatters, and also in the book about remote viewing by M.G. Hocking, who was a guest on this show 7 weeks ago. As well as that, two cases were reported in the Daily Mail in the UK, and there was a film made based on these amazing discoveries. Of course, these experiences don't happen in every case. Also, the medical authorities do their best to hide the identity of the donor, so it's surprising that this effect is known of at all. But before you switch off in total disbelief, let me say that you're not alone. Most people think it's too spooky to be plausible. Things like this don't happen, because they can't happen. It's only the change of an internal organ after all. So let me give you an example. A young lady who was a gifted artist, who painted landscapes, was run over and killed. She'd been gay and she painted landscapes while looking at a female model. Her heart was transplanted into a young man who was told that the donor was a lady. After the transplant, he had an uncanny knowledge of how a woman felt about things, and particularly about sex. Another thing was that he never went to museums or art galleries, but now he went every week and would stand and stare at paintings, particularly landscapes. His girlfriend, who was very surprised at these changes in him, would leave him standing looking at paintings and then come back later. This outline of a published case is typical of the way that the personality of the heart donor seems to be transferred across to the new owner of the heart. Not surprisingly, these cases have featured in newspaper articles and a film, as well as the medical and scientific press. Biologists have used words like cellular memories to explain these unexplainable lifestyle changes. In another case, a woman in her 30s was given the heart and lungs of a girl 14 years her junior, a happy, bubbly person who was killed in a road accident. After the transplant, she repeatedly dreamed about a happy and bubbly person, and although she had never appeared happy herself, and frowned a lot. With her new heart, her personality changed, and she would laugh and smile. And here's another case in which two similar teenage girls were brought together by a heart. One of the girls had died from a fall while dancing. She wanted to be an actress, but her parents thought she should study to be a doctor. The other teenager, who received her heart, found she would talk to the heart and could feel that the donor was sad and with a problem choosing her career. Her mother later said that the daughter had decided to go to medical school. So although cases like this could be put down to imagination or chance individually, collectively the 70 cases have to be taken seriously. And in some cases there is much more evidence of detailed knowledge or habits being carried across with the transplant. In one case, the heart of a 9-year-old girl who had been murdered was given to a girl of similar age who then suffered repeating nightmares about a girl being killed. She described her dreams in detail so that eventually it was realized that the memories of the murder might lead to finding the killer, which in fact was what happened. The killer was caught and convicted. Now I'd like to summarise a long article published in the UK Daily Mirror on the 9th of April 2008. It's concerning a lady, Claire Sylvia, of 47, who was dying from heart disease when she received the heart of an 18-year-old boy who had been killed in a biking accident in Maine, USA. And Claire, who had been a professional dancer, was amazed to find that she seemed to be acquiring the characteristics and cravings of the donor. When still in hospital, she was visited by two reporters, and one asked, "What do you want now that you have a good heart?" And she replied, "Actually, I'm dying for a beer right now," which was a strange, flippant answer, as she didn't even like beer, but she felt that nothing else would quench her thirst. Later, she wondered if the donor had been a beer drinker, and then discovered she had developed a sudden fondness for certain foods that she hadn't liked before. Snickers bars, green peppers, and chicken nuggets. This remarkable story was told in her book, Change of Heart, in which she noted that she could not be told the identity of the donor. She found that she was actually aware that she was living with a man's heart, which was affecting her in many ways. Claire was becoming more masculine, confident, and assertive. Her feminine tentativeness had disappeared. Then, around this time, she had a quite startling and unforgettable dream in which she was with a tall young man with sandy hair. His name was Tim Layton, or something similar, so she thought of him as Tim L. In the dream, they kissed goodbye, but after that dream, something had changed. She knew that Tim's spirit and personality were within her. She tried to check this information with the transplant team, but they observed their strict code of confidentiality. Then a friend, who she told her story to, suggested that it might be possible to find the obituary of Tim, the biker, in old newspapers just before her transplant date. This they did, and Claire was shocked that they found the obituary of a Tim Lamirade, who had died in a motorbike accident. The dream about him was true after all. The news clip mentioned his two brothers and five sisters and gave the address. Sometime later, she wrote to Mr. Lemirade, who agreed to meet her and take her to the house, where she met Tim's mother and family. During a discussion about the weather and such things, she asked if Tim liked beer and green peppers. Yes, was the reply, but what he really loved were chicken nuggets, which were just the things that Claire had suddenly found she was craving some long time previously. So then, the question that arises from all these stories is, could there possibly have been some way that the person receiving the heart could have obtained the information by ordinary means? For example, could private information, or even names, have been inadvertently passed on through the medical team or the organising staff? This question was apparently asked by Claire Sylvia, who was assured that this could not have happened as the rules of confidentiality are quite clear. Only the very basic information is given, like the sex and age of the donor. It seems that all these cases have only come to light where a special investigation has been made in a scientific way to discreetly ask questions about the donor from the family and then to compare the answers with similar questions put to the recipient and family. Presumably, any publication would then need subsequent personal approval by all concerned. In a few cases, like Claire Sylvia, a book has been written and published which has helped to spread the information, making it generally known. In Claire's case, the important contact between the new heart and herself came in a dream, probably something like a lucid dream, which was something very special to her. Another case involving dreams was one in which a man was shot in the face and died. The heart recipient had dreams of a man with long hair and a beard, and then saw a bright flash of light in the face, making the face feel very hot. Later, they turned into repeated flashbacks or daydreams of that same experience. It turned out that the vision of a man with long hair and a beard was probably the man who had fired the gun. Just another case of these apparent memories that are transferred with the heart. In another case, a small boy fell from an apartment window and his heart was given to a 5-year-old boy having severe heart disease. After the transplant, the boy realized somehow that the donor had fallen, that he was younger, that he was called Tim, and he knew his favorite toy. And it was all correct. All too much to be called coincidence, that's clear. Similarly, in another case, the donor was a 3-year-old girl who drowned in the family swimming pool. The young recipient later said that he talked to the donor sometimes, and she was very sad. It turned out that the donor had been upset because of the parents' divorce, and then the recipient became afraid of water, but he didn't know why, whereas previously he had loved it. And just one more case to show how memories of the donor alter the personalities and habits of the recipient. A 19-year-old was killed in a car crash, but the recipient reported that almost every night she could feel the accident the donor had had, feeling the impact on her chest. At the same time, the donor's dislike of meat came through affecting the recipient, who could not touch meat subsequently. These strange sort of details are repeated very often when inquiring about the effect of heart transplants. There's no way that it's all make-believe. So the big question is, what's the answer? What is going on? And what could possibly be the reason? Is it biological or psychological? So now, in this section, I'm going to address these problems. Firstly, I'm going to discuss the science attitude to all this. Then I'll give the whole range of published solutions to the problems of how and why, followed by some of my own ideas. Okay, now the scientific attitude. As I explained, a scientific investigation into transplants has established the facts of a set of cases which are hard to dispute, which therefore set in stone the case that this strange mechanism exists. Of course, those that are openly sceptical about the paranormal will never accept evidence as a matter of principle, so are best ignored. But a considerable level of interest was generated in the general public, who accepted the evidence and so wondered how and why. The public looked to science for guidance on explanations, as they do in all these matters. And quite a few writers and scientists did their best to make reasonable noises of explanation, despite the fact that the science of the paranormal is extremely fragmented and based in general on misguided principles. Science is all about seeking the truth by finding out how and why things work, without being constrained by prejudices and taboos and ingrained, misguided, illogical thinking. However, a few lines of approach have been followed, and it's this that I'm going to talk about today. Dealing with the evidence of transplanted heart memory is clearly very difficult, and much misguided, illogical thinking has crept in. So I'm going to talk about that first. The religious concept of soul, which started perhaps 1,000 years ago, has not gone away despite materialistic science looking for evidence. Very often, the evidence from the paranormal is used to promote the idea of soul, and I've seen writings where the memory of a transplanted heart is used as evidence for the existence of the soul of the donor becoming merged with the soul of the receiver. While this idea may be attractive to some, others use the word spirit instead of soul, suggesting that a sudden death leaves the spirit in limbo. I have to say, I look for better explanations. Looking at the literature of heart transplant memory, there is a very interesting array of ideas based on imagination rather than an examination of the evidence. Words like dynamic ongoing two-way dialogue are used, and the heart is sometimes given its own intrinsic nervous system, calling it a little brain. It seems to me that these are just verbal constructions designed to fit the facts, but which say very little. Phrases like the heart is a conductor of energy in the body's cells, or it contains stored information that continually passes through the body, or info-energetic cellular memories, and the heart resonates with information containing energy. How about this one? The heart's energy is the centre of the entire harmonious organ concept. Wow. I have to ask, do any of these flowery ideas get any nearer to some sort of understanding? I fear not. But there have been some thoughts about theories of explanation. One is the hospital grapevine theory, where tittle-tattle between doctors or nurses might plant information into the patient's subconscious. This doesn't seem very likely. Nor does the drug theory, in which the immunosuppressant drugs used to stop rejection possibly cause the noted changes in the patient's personality. The other theory or idea put forward is the quantum theory. The strange world of quantum has been suggested as the reason for these strange transplanted memories, but I feel it's only clutching at straws. Then we come to theories regarding cellular memory, which are used to explain memories that belong to the heart donor unexpectedly appearing in the mind of the recipient. It is said that heart tissue contains some of the same type of cells as found in brain tissue, which does give us a start in a mechanistic search for answers, which may well be a valid concept. The well-known and outspoken scientist Bruce Lipton began his career as a cell biologist and has become famous for his controvertible proof that biology's most cherished tenets regarding genetic determinism are fundamentally flawed. Or in other words, it's something more than DNA and genes that create a person. It's more to do with cells and the environment in which they live. In his book, The Biology of Belief, he shows that cells are the building blocks of life, not genes. Genes and DNA guide the building and separation of cells, and particularly the cell membrane, about which Lipton has a great deal to say. Having personally never studied even basic biology, I look at all these things in my own way, that is, in the way of a mechanical and electrical engineer, and I find I can follow Bruce Lipton's analysis of the fundamentals of biology in mechanistic terms. The 50 trillion cells that make our bodies are all individual organisms that interact socially in organized communities in whichever part of the body they reside. But the really big message that Lipton suggests is that the important part of cells is the membrane, which is composed of protein that is manufactured from the 100,000 proteins available. Each cell creates an appropriate membrane for whatever position it is in the body, which allows it to live in its local community, being a cell in the skin, or the eye, heart, or brain. And that's a very different way of looking at how life is formed from the conventional theories that say it's all in the genetic code. This new biology, sometimes called epigenetics, shows that the cell membrane is constantly in a state of flux and changes by information from outside the cell, or as he says, from the environment, which is something I have thought for 35 years. When it comes to organ transplants, Lipton talks about cellular memory and the notion that somehow memories are embedded in the cells. He says he has immense respect for the intelligence of single cells, but he has to draw the line at cellular memory. They can remember if they are muscle or liver cells, but there is a limit. They cannot remember things like the name of the original owner or whether he liked chicken nuggets. The only way he tries to explain transplanted memory is to say that we are all immortal and our memories are all in the collective unconscious, as it were. Bruce Lipton's contribution to the advancement of new biology is clearly immense, but it does not stretch to a fundamental explanation for cellular biology. So now we come to my own idea about the paranormal side of life. 35 years ago, I coined the word cytotelesis, that's cells speaking to cells, as an explanation for the way life works, using the mechanism that some of us believe in, that's telepathy. I realized long ago that the way that anything grows is not entirely due to DNA, but that there it has to be something else, which not only organizes our growth of arms and legs in the womb, but also our head and brain. And then later, the brain's computers are programmed with an operating system to control all bodily functions automatically, but also to program things like our instinctive behavior and personality. This idea has gradually caught on. Rupert Sheldrake's book, The New Science of Life, explained the need for biology to invoke a way that cells speak to cells between the members of each species. This he called morphic resonance, but I preferred the word telepathy or cytotelesis. But what then has this to do with the transplanted hearts? Quite a lot, I think. It's been established that there is some similarity between heart cells and brain cells, and Bruce Lipton tells us that cells live in their own colonies. My suggestion is that the donor's heart cells move in the bloodstream to the brain and then become part of the recipient's brain and mind, which I would have thought is plausible and fits the facts as we have observed them. So we now have the donor cells in the strange brain, and perhaps in their own colonies in that brain, which can speak to cells in the brain of relatives, just as my cells speak to my relatives' cells, which we know happens, and we call it telepathy. Therefore, the donor cells could pick up information related to the life of the donor, like habits, likes and dislikes, or even the donor's name, which of course appears on the face of it to be a very far-fetched idea. But if you think about it, it is very much in line with many paranormal things that are accepted that happen to people. Things like healing, past life memories, hauntings, or telepathy, to name a few. My proposed view of the way that donor memory is transferred is quite novel, but accords with the new ideas of how microbiology works and the new science of life from Rupert Sheldrake, in which he showed why cells need to speak to cells. He didn't know how cells speak to cells, but assumed it was some cosmic resonance, which he called morphic resonance. My studies of telepathy have indicated what the carrier is, which gives explanation to cytotelesis and telepathy, and I think the strange transfer of information when a heart is transplanted into another person. I do hope my ramblings have made some sense today. If you're interested, there's more background information in my book Sublimity or my website, 3wsublimity.org.uk. Remember, there's always an explanation why the paranormal is normal. This is Richard Allibone signing off for today from webtalkradio.net. Bye for now.